Welcome to another episode of What's the Point? I am Nathan Birch with my co-host Patrick Kinoy. We are joined today by Sheldon Akins. I said it wrong, didn't I?
Dr. Akins.
All right. He is joining us today. He is the author of the book Leading Equity and also works with the Leading Equity Center. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We are here live at the Innovate Education Plus Innovate Conference. So tell us a little bit about your journey as an educator, kind of your background and how you kind of got to this point.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I initially started off as a history teacher in the Virgin Islands. So
wow.
First teaching job out the gate, U.S. Virgin Islands, St. Croix, had the opportunity to meet some amazing students, which kind of introduced me to culturally responsiveness because I blended in until I started talking. And then I started realizing that a lot of the things that I was doing from the state side of things was very rude and not maybe as just be mindful of the different cultures that I was in. And so someone pulled me by the coattail and said, Sheldon, your practices, the thing that you're doing is very rude to us. Like, you're not saying good morning to us. You're not saying good afternoon, which we don't always do in the state side of things. But in their culture, it was very important. And so that kind of introduced me to this world of culture responsiveness and just being more mindful of the spaces that I'm in. I've taught as a history teacher in the U.S. Virgin Islands and, of course, in the States. Had some opportunities to be a school principal as well. So had that under my belt. And then I got my PhD and thought, oh, well, you need to be a professor. So you need to move into higher education. I did that, but then I realized I missed the kids way too much and went back to K-12. So that's where I'm at this point. It's just kind of working still with in the K-12 realm. And I started the Leading Equity Center just because I was a black man living in Idaho, and I just could tell you all kind of stories. And I was like, I don't know what I'm experiencing. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help my students. And so I started the podcast, my podcast, Leading Equity, about 5 years ago. And it's brought me here.
Yeah. What, I'm just curious, how did you get to the U.S. Virgin Islands? Like, what led you there?
So I did not look for a job after I got done with my bachelor's degree in social science. I was working at a call center. I was doing well there. I was probably making more money than I would make as a teacher. So I didn't look. And so the whole summer went through. And then they decided to outsource my department to another call center. And they were like, you got to start over, basically. So then I started trying to look around, but it was kind of late. All the jobs were gone. This wasn't teacher shortage days.
Right.
These were the days where the jobs were gone.
Yeah.
And I had just a random phone call. I was literally sitting playing video games with my brother. I was like, I don't want to go to work tomorrow. Got a call. Is this Sheldon? And I was like, yeah. He said, this is the superintendent from the Virgin Islands. We needed a history teacher. I got your information from the dean. Are you interested? And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, first plane out, I was in the Virgin Islands.
That's great. That's great.
You know, I enjoyed having the chance to read your book. When we found out we were going to be doing this podcast, Nathan and I both quickly bought the book and started reading, and had really good discussions about the content of the book. So how did it come to be, you know, the whole process of writing a book about your topic of leading equity?
You know, I've been approached before the book. You know, I had been approached by a few publishers, and I always said I don't like to write. I podcast for a reason. I hate writing. And I barely got through my dissertation. I mean, that's a whole nother story in itself.
Uh-huh.
And it just, the timing wise, they were like, we really would like to hear your voice on paper. And I could not figure out how to write. I had it in my ideas, in my mind, and so it was like 10 different points that I wanted to establish. But as those deadlines started coming in, and the due dates, and the publishers like, we really want this book, I started just outlining my points, and then I turned the microphone on. And so there's a lot of my episodes that are basically chapters of my book, which was very helpful for me to get it transcribed, and then I can kind of clean it up and add to it and add my research. But at least I had somewhere to start, as opposed to just sitting there and just kind of trying to type, and then I see something red, or I lose my thought, someone calls me or something, and I, you know, you get lost into it. So my goal is to really help educators with the tools and resources necessary to ensure equity at their schools. And that can look in various ways. So people will tell me, oh, well, we live in Idaho, you know, we don't have any challenges here. You know, that's for students of color only. And I say, there's so, you're coming from a very limited mindset. You know, there's so much, there's students that are LGBTQ, there's social economic status, there's all these different things that are out there. It's not limited to just race. And so that's what I wanted to put into that book. For those, whether you're first day teaching, and you know, you've lived a certain lifestyle, and or you've been a veteran, you've been in the game for a while, or you're a person that can personally identify with a lot of the thing that's in there, it's helpful for everybody.
I would agree. You know, a lot of practical advice and good stories that you tell for people to use when they're in the education profession. I enjoyed many of the like charts and diagrams, yeah, if you mm-hmm. will, that you have with questions to ask, yeah, and if they respond mm-hmm. a particular way. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, people ask me all the time for, give me a checklist. What do I do? Step A, step two. And I don't have that for you, because I feel like every situation is going to always have different context behind it. However, I can give you some frameworks. I can give you some, here's some, a few things, talking points that you can say, because that's always another thing. It's like, okay, I get it, Sheldon. I need to be an advocate for all students, but what do I say to my boss? Or this is Midwest niceness. We don't do that kind of stuff. Like, how do we engage in these conversations where I can talk to my supervisor, or I can talk to a student or a parent, and have these conversations? So there, a lot of that's in that book to give those pointers that maybe you didn't think about it from this perspective, maybe you made these assumptions in the past, maybe you said something in the past and it just didn't go well. Well, here's some other ways to look at it. Here's another approach that you can take.
One of the things I really appreciated about how you structured your book was, I really feel like it's a book full of action, right? And so oftentimes, when you're reading on topic of equity, a lot of times it sets the foundational pieces, which I think mm-hmm. are very important, mm-hmm. but where I've gotten stuck sometimes is now what? What right. can I do? What actions can I take?
Right.
And even thinking about being an advocate, sometimes that gets feeling of like, in the moment, okay, I want to be an advocate, but you talk through about how the work you can do up front mm-hmm. to set yourself in a position yeah. so when those moments arise, you're prepared yeah. to do those things, and I think that can be a really tough thing. So I know you talked about creating the Leading Equity Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of what its mission is and what that the work you do with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I grew up in an entrepreneurial home, and I said, I can't do this. Like, I could never want to own my own business, and that's just not a thing I wanted to do. So that's why I went into education. I was like, I want to know exactly when my checks are coming. I want the retirement. I want benefits, the whole nine. And like I said, black man living in Idaho.
Yeah.
I could tell you some stories of all the experiences, and I was like, okay, I'm learning these things. I'm going to start this show, and I want to share this with people. And then people started reaching out, and they were like, can you come and train our teachers on cultural responsiveness, or can you come speak? We have I heard it on your show that you've worked with Native Americans. Can you speak to us? Because our district has a large population, or we're right next to a reservation. There's some things you can do. And next thing I know, start a business.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I start the business, it's like people are like wanting more and more training, more and more support. So I provide workshops, keynote presentations, I have online courses, of course I have books and things like that, and over 335 podcast episodes at this wow. point, over the last few years. And again, just my goal is to help educators, because at the end of the day, it's going to help the students and help them be successful.
Right.
Does your podcast come out weekly?
Yeah, every okay. Monday.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have subscribed and have been getting them.
Yes, thank you.
The last episode that I listened to was about, I think it was grading practices.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
the last one that popped up on my phone.
Yeah, we come out, like I said, come out every Monday. I've been doing a few solo ones because I'm actually in the process of writing my second book. So, you know, again, you're getting a sneak peek of what's to come. But yeah. that one is going to be all about creating a sense of belonging. Because, you know, unfortunately, nowadays, you know, semantics sometimes can play a factor. You hear certain words and, oh, that's culture response, that's critical race theory, or this or that's that. And so I think at the end of the day, we can all agree, whatever your background, we want our kids to belong. And what are some things that we can do to make sure that all of our students belong? And I think we can all agree on that. Whatever back word you want to use to describe that, we want them to belong.
And I think that's where when I've worked with staff, a common feeling across is like, we love the kids that come into our school.
Yeah.
And we want them to feel both like they belong inside our school, but also who they are is valued as individuals, and validating who they are and what their culture is. And I think being able to focus on that. I know, Dr. Kino, you've done a lot of work with being very intentional about sense of belonging in your school, and making that a big focus point for kids.
Yes, we have. We've actually had it as one of our school improvement plan goals. So with that being said, I'm very interested in your thoughts on what are some action steps schools can take to help all of our students and staff as well, and community members, you know, feel a sense of belonging on campus.
Well, my formula is, in order for a student or staff member to feel as if they belong, they have to feel accepted, supported, and included. Okay, if we focus on those three things, accepted, supported, and included, that's the framework, if you will. From there are, from a leadership standpoint, which I always say, your leadership is key when it comes to creating any school culture or change or those kind of things. But take a look at what does your content look like? Are we only celebrating certain aspects, identities on special months or on holidays? Or is this something that we do all the time? Are we focusing on certain groups of people and saying, what do your people think about this? Are some of the language that we're utilizing, what does that look like? Again, best intentions. Right, we're just going to assume that the intentions are there, but the impact isn't always there. If I had the time, I could really dig into like strategies on how to do that. But just the simple things, again, thinking about, are we tokenizing folks? Are kids able to be who they are inside and outside of the classroom? Sometimes people say, oh, it's okay for you to be black and brown, but not black and brown in this space. You need to be part of our embracing culture. And as a result, that person loses a lot of their identity and who they are, because they won't fit in if they are really trying to be who they want to be. So those are some little things that we can try to pay attention to.
When do you anticipate this book coming out?
I have two more chapters to finish, and I will get it to the publisher by August. That's the goal.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how long the first draft and revisions and all that stuff will take. So, not really sure. Okay. Probably about another 6 to 7 months is my goal.
Okay. Great. So you talked a little bit about kind of those three big things. And so if you're, a lot of times we talk about, like, our podcast is called What's the Point? And so we kind of ask, like, if you're a beginning principal or maybe even an established principal, and you're looking across your building and you're realizing that sense of belonging, being inclusive of all cultures is something that maybe could use some attention, or maybe isn't, we're not meeting all kids where they need to be. What would be a starting point or an entry point for those principals who are realizing that it's something to focus on, something that should be a goal of the building?
And I'm assuming that we've already asked our students how they feel?
Yeah, I think so. There'd have to be some, yes.
Because, you know, sometimes we'll say, oh, as from our position, oh, the kids that we don't have, that's national news. That's not at our school.
That, so it sounds like you're saying part of that is I think getting some student feedback.
Get your student feedback. And I started doing a lot of student affinity groups a couple years ago as a result of what happened with George Floyd, because I had students that were just trying to figure out, okay, how do I support my peers who are dealing with this, and I don't necessarily know how to support them. So I started doing affinity groups. And the other piece that I realized is we could do a lot of professional development, discipline, classroom management, lesson planning, all those things. That doesn't necessarily mean that a student's experiences are going to change if we just focus only on the staff. So I like to say, ask your students, how is it? How is your school experience? What is it like for you to, from the time you get on the bus to the time you get on the bus again? What does that look like for you? And involve those questions for them, because they're going to tell you how it really is. We can assume all we want, and we can think it's a certain way, but unless we actually ask them, we don't have a starting point in order to kind of reach what you initially asked. Well, how do we improve a sense of belonging if we realize we're not getting there?
Right, right.
That's such a good point, because so oftentimes in our efforts to want to improve our campuses, mm-hmm. we forget about the children.
Yeah. Simple thing. I tell people, like, okay, you're hiring teachers. Do you have students on your board or your committee, your search committee? Are they involved? Do they have a say, or do they just show up to the first day of school and there's a brand new teacher that you hand selected? What input do the students have in regards to those hiring practices? Just simple things that we do all the time because maybe it's easier, more convenient for us. But we don't necessarily get our students involved in those processes, and they wonder why there's a mismatch there or the connection's not always there. There's a lot more buy-in you'll get from students when they have a say in who you're hiring as far as their teacher, their next counselor, assistant principal, whoever it is.
Right.
Trying to think of, you know, you mentioned so many great points in your book. You know, and can you talk about what it means to be an advocate?
An advocate recognizes that we do not live in a just society, and we're willing to speak up and speak out on behalf of others. No matter what position I'm in, if I'm in a leadership position or if I have some sort of privilege in some other aspects of the life, can I be a broker? Can I be an individual that's going to connect? Hey, you know what? I think you should get to know this person, or I think that, you know, I'm in this meeting and people that are being talked about aren't represented in this space. Are there some things that I can say to support those people, even if I don't personally relate to a lot of their experiences? But am I in a place, or do I have funding available? Are there connections that can be made? That's what being an advocate for. And that's how we can, and it's all in the book, about ways that we can utilize whatever gifts we have or whatever backgrounds we have, we can utilize those to support others.
Thank you.
And you talk about it in the book also, and I think you hear a lot of times about being an ally, mm-hmm. and you talk about that in your book. Can you talk a little about kind of like your mindset around an ally?
I feel like ally can be a self-description of the word and doesn't necessarily bring in the action piece.
Yeah.
I talked about in the beginning of the book about how, like, I've been a part of the NAACP and I've been a part of these organizations, and it seems like they only want to hear you when they want to hear you. And I felt like over time, I realized, you know, and nothing against those groups or those, you know, but a lot of times people say, oh, this person has an agenda because they're a part of this committee or they're a part of this nationally recognized group. I feel personally like I can do things on my own as Sheldon, as opposed to being affiliated with certain groups of people. When I say I'm an ally, I feel like often that can be viewed as just a safe word, you know, it's an acceptable word. But it, again, doesn't attribute to any type of action. I can say I'm an ally. Come to my room. There's a rainbow on my door. You're safe here. That's great. But if a LGBTQ student comes up to you and tells you I'm being discriminated against or there's some prejudice, are you going to do anything for them to support them or help them? Or are you just going to be that safe room for them? So that's why I like to say I'm a disruptor. Sometimes you might hear co-conspirator. Because that seems signifies more action as opposed to just being a verb. An adjective.
Right. You mentioned this earlier, but that, you know, sometimes words can get in the way mm-hmm. of the work, mm-hmm. where we get hung up on what some of the things that are politicized out there, and in reality, what we want is. We want kids to feel safe at school. We want kids to have success at school. We want them to feel like that's part of it. I'm guessing in your work you've ran into some of those roadblocks. Have you seen any examples of administrators or schools doing a good job of focusing on the target of making sure kids feel like they belong at school, that they feel safe, that it's a good environment for them? And I mean, do you have any kind of tips on that as administrators or schools try to maneuver through making sure they do what's right for all students?
Well, first of all, you have to be willing to engage in these conversations. They're not always easy.
Right.
And so that's the first part is recognize, okay, we need to make some changes. There's always room for growth. I always tell people there's always room for growth. No matter where you think you are, again, it's not our school, not here. I'm sure if we ask your kids, they might have differences of opinion. So the first thing is really being willing to engage engage in the very difficult conversations and those difficult challenges, because you will get pushback. Whenever we're talking about change, even if it's to get a brand new book into your classroom or into your building, it's a change that we're asking teachers or asking the community to do, there's going to be some sort of pushback, so you have to be willing to engage in that. And if you start there, that sets the tone. And then I always try to say, if you can get more buy-in, strength in numbers, right? As a school leader, you can do it on your own, but if you got a lead, your lead teachers, the teachers of influence or community members of influence are on board as well, it makes it a lot easier to make those changes take place.
Yeah, and I appreciate that in your book where you talk about, and you brought up a lot of times about the idea of action, and I always think like if the topic or the thing is worth doing, mm-hmm. then we should be able to convince others it's worth doing and get them to have that common purpose mm-hmm. with us and do that. And I think so hearing that is a good starting point.
I also liked hearing about in your book the whole idea of being comfortable being mm-hmm. uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, I think so often as leaders, you know, we want to make people feel comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But part of that then is that change doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah, if we sit in complacency, where we're just kind of, well, we'll just let it be as it is because I don't want to ruffle any feathers. I don't want to go against the grain. Sometimes we have the imposter syndrome. We're like, well, who am I to say these things? Mm-hmm. I'm a brand new principal, and I'm just trying to get my feet wet and just trying to figure out life. And so we're tiptoeing around because maybe it makes us feel comfortable. And then we forget, well, who is that going to impact the most, right? Your students. So if we really want to see them thrive, then I think we need to give them the tools they need to thrive. And it may not be an easy conversation. And we have to be okay with that.
Right. So our name of the podcast is What's the Point?
Mm-hmm.
And so we always like to try to end it on thinking about if there's one takeaway or one point that would be good for anyone that listens to this podcast to walk away. Thinking about the work that you do and the importance of it, what would you want people to take away from your message and your work?
My favorite quote from Dr. King is, if you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But by all means, keep moving. Change doesn't occur overnight. I mean, sometimes when we're trying to make change, we're talking about generations of systems that have been put in place or practices or these events that we do every year at our school. Well, they may not be right, but we do whatever. It's our tradition. This is our heritage and all these kind of things. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to change overnight. So at the end of the day, keep moving. And that would be the word of advice I would give.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us today. I recommend everyone checking out the book, Leading Equity. I think if you're looking for a book that can outline action and things that you can start right away with doing and furthering yourself in the journey, it's a fantastic book. Dr. King, any last thoughts?
I also wholeheartedly recommend the book and the podcast series.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Learned a lot already. And the Leading Equity Center website is also very informative and helpful as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, so I just said that if they're looking to find your podcast or your the center, where would be a good place?
Yeah, just in your whatever podcast you subscribe to, Leading Equity is the name of the show.
Okay.
And then you can always find more information at leadingequitycenter.com.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.